I'm not exactly sure what the Book International is.
So the International Booker Prize, any book in translation that is published in English in the UK is eligible. So it's a prize to give to books, but we see it more as a celebration of translated literature in the UK.
Hello and welcome to everyone listening in today. I hope you're all doing well. I, Taniola, will be your host for today's session. I'm here with Anton Herr. Would you like to introduce yourself, please?
Yes, hi. I'm Anton Herr. I am a novelist and a translator. And apparently people still care that I was a judge for the International Booker Prize this year.
Oh, that's really cool. So I have a few questions for you today. Could you please give us some examples of the translations you've done in the past?
Sure. I have actually done a lot of fiction because of the marketplace, really, because it's where the most demand is. But I've also done quite a lot of poetry and nonfiction as well. To me, a good book is a good book, and I don't care what genre it is. And the divide between fiction and nonfiction, for example, you know, nonfiction has characters, setting, like all of that. Yeah. So, and narrators, and, you know, so if the book interests me, then I become interested in translating it. And yeah, and that's where we are today.
What's your go-to genre?
My go-to genre is actually poetry.
Ooh,
because
okay.
That's what I specialized in.
Yeah, yeah, of
yes,
course.
Yes,
yeah.
In grad school with Dr. Nancy Cho, who is sitting next to me, and who is your English teacher.
Yeah.
Yes.
So what were your motivations for your translations?
It's really funny because when I read a book and I really love it, my first instinct is to translate it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very strange instinct because I feel like for normal people, if you love a book, your first instinct is to tell your best friend how much you love this book and your best friend should read this book. Or maybe if you're a writer, then you want to write something like it or use a device that book uses so that you can sort of master that device yourself. But for me, my instinct is to turn it into another language. If it's a Korean book, then into English. If it's an English book, then into Korean.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's a very weird biological response, but it is a biological response.
Okay. I would love to hear more about your novel. Please, could you tell us what's about?
Sure. It's about AI, poetry, clones. It's about the end of humanity and what survives humanity. And one of the things that survives is poetry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are your motivations for that in particular? Do you have any? Would you just enjoy, like...
It was also biological.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It just came out of me. it's such so pretentious thing to say, but I feel like if you think too much about like what you are putting down on paper, like at least for the first draft, it kind of gets in the way of completing a work of art. I feel like writing a novel is more of an act of excavation more than it is an act of constructing something.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was unearthing it from my subconscious. So I didn't know what would come out of my subconscious until I had it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so I just enjoyed the process, and the novel Toward Eternity is what came out of that excavation.
Yeah, awesome. I would like to ask, what would you say is your target audience?
Wow. So for translation, we actually did research on this at the Booker Prize Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
The audience for translated literature tends to skew younger than the audience for literature in general.
Okay.
There's also more of a parity, gender parity, between male and female readers. So it seems like people who read translated literature tend to be younger, and gender doesn't seem to matter.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the other thing? Like, you could be a bit more experimental and daring.
Yeah.
Compared to, say, very, very commercial mainstream literature written in English. So I always have the adventurous reader in mind when I translate my books.
Yeah. Okay, that's really interesting. What would you say inspired your interest for literature? Maybe from like when you were young, or any specific authors that you liked?
I don't know. Literature has just always been everything. Mm-hmm. It's always been like the thing where I would get tired of anything else, or you know, I'd be interested in many things, but it was always the thing that always remained at my core. It was my identity, and it was my everything, and it defined who I was and how I looked at the world and how the world looked at me. And so it's very hard to like go back and think about like what made literature the thing. For a lot of people, it's music. For other people, you know, it's like scientific study. A lot of people are very scientific naturalist kind of outlook in life, and all of that is very, very beautiful. I like, my favorite author is A.S. Byatt. So she really, really inspired me to think really deeply about literature, and that's why my pen name Anton Her comes from Antonia Susan Byatt.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, that's really interesting. What has been the impact in your international identity that has worked for you?
I have no idea, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because for me, it's always been a hindrance to not be living in New York or London. In terms of, because that's where my industry is, not just the book writing industry, but also the translation industry, like translated book industry. So to me, I've always perceived it as, oh God, like I have to go to London again. I have to go to New York again. So, and I have to go show my face again. Otherwise, you know, they forget that you exist, apparently. And so I've always, so I've really never thought that being international was a particular strength. But now that I think about it, I mean, if you are from somewhere else and you come to the center, then you bring something to that center. And so there must be something that I bring, a perspective that they just don't have at the center. And so it's, but it's a very nebulous thing, and you can't take it for granted that you have something that you're bringing. I think you really have to hone a particular skill or a particular perspective, and you have to be a very good listener. All of that, it's, those things are so, so crucial. Like, you can't just be like, oh, I'm international, so I must be special. Like,
no,
that, I don't think it really works that way.
Yeah, I agree. Would you say that your work has, like, had an impact on, like, how you, your outlook on life, or, you know, how you do things?
I absolutely do. I think writing and translating for me is thinking. And I think too many of us, most of us really, don't really think about what we're doing or think through something. I think because of social media, because of the news cycle, and because the modern world is so frenetic and so full of stimuli, it's very unusual now to just sit alone in a room and just think and just let yourself be bored and to just like really think through a problem. For example, who is going to read this work? What would that person like to look at? How do I change their minds about something? And we don't really do that. I think if you're in a beautiful, wonderful school like this, where they really educate you to think, you know, to really to take a moment and to write a paper and to go through some math problems and to really, really think, I think that's, this is just such a precious time and a precious opportunity that's, that will just get harder and harder like as you grow, because then you'll have so many responsibilities and whatnot. So yeah, I think I'm very, very grateful to writing and for translating to, for still giving me that opportunity to continue to think.
So would you say that being able to like think outside the box and being open-minded has like helped you with your translating and your love for literature, let's say?
I hope so. Like, I don't dare say that I'm open-minded,
of course,
with my own mouth. That would be weird. I hope so. I try to. I think I have the sensation of always running up against a wall and realizing that I have certain prejudices and I have certain limitations.
Of course.
I think that's a good thing that
I think
feel
everyone
that way.
Does.
Exactly. I think it's a good thing that people, for example, feel shame.
Because
I think a lot of people are shameless.
Yeah.
But if you feel guilty or you feel shame, ashamed about something, it means that you have a conscience.
And
you have ethics.
So
so I try to feel as much shame as possible in my daily life. And I try to embrace it, and I try to, you know, just change my own mind as much as possible. So I hope that I go toward open-mindedness, but I feel like the feeling of being open-minded is actually very disturbing, and we should try to embrace it.
I think it does make us who we are, and like we are all very different individuals. And I will ask, what has been your greatest achievement so far?
When I looked at this question, when it was given to me,
yeah.
I thought, what is my greatest achievement? I really feel like I haven't really done anything.
I mean, for you, what are you most content about?
What am I? I guess this is going to sound so silly, but when I was a child and I wanted to be a writer, I told myself, it doesn't matter if I never win an award, and to this day, I've never won an award. I never won a literary award if I never become famous. I just want to be able to make a modest living, doing what I want to do.
Yeah.
And as I grew older, I became very specific. I was like, oh, I will need this much money, over this many years. And I would want to live in this much of a, not a big house, but maybe this size of a house.
Yeah.
So I became very, very specific. And I congratulated myself whenever I hit those milestones. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I thought it was a very modest dream to be able to make a living doing what I wanted to do. Mm. I realize that that's just getting so much harder, especially for, the younger generations.
Yeah,
it's easier for my generation, but for younger generations, it's getting harder and harder and harder to do that.
Yeah.
And so now, what used to be like a modest dream is now
insane.
Yeah. So, and it's really terrible. And it's mostly the fault of our generations that this is happening.
Yeah, don't worry. Yeah. I don't blame you. It's okay.
It's okay if you blame me. I have plenty of shame. Okay. Yeah. That I feel like is my greatest achievement. And hopefully, I want to contribute and I do something for the community that fostered me, and that's partly why I decided to say yes to being a judge for the International Booker Prize.
So where do you want to end up next?
Oh wow, so we're about to buy a house. So I know exactly how much more money that I need to make in the next 3 years. So I would like to end up in a room of my own, as Virginia Woolf would say.
Okay.
Yeah, so that, and also, God, at this point, I feel like I've really done a lot of what I set out to achieve, and I've done a lot of things that I never thought that I would get to do.
Yeah.
So,
like what exactly?
Well, like judging prizes.
Yeah.
I judged the Dublin Literary Award last year, the Booker this year. I became a debut novelist. I want to keep writing novels. So I think I'm at a very nice place right now, very fulfilled place, and I'm trying not to be too greedy. And now I think I really have to think more about how am I going to pay it forward.
Yeah, that's understandable. And do you think you'll carry these values to, for instance, children or anyone that you want to influence?
No, I hope so.
Yeah.
Anyone who reads my translations or work, I hope they feel like they've been cared for in some way.
So I'm not exactly sure what the Book International is.
So the International Booker Prize is similar to the Booker Prize in that it awards a single book published within an eligibility period, which is a year. It's April to April right now. And so any book in translation that is published in English in the UK is eligible.
Okay.
And so publishers like Fitzcarraldo, Charco Press, they send in books for consideration. And so 154 books happen to, land for this year.
Yeah.
And so the judges who are selected by the Booker Prize people.
Yeah.
So the judges are different every year. And this year, we had to read those 154 books and have discussions about what are the best books, what is the long list and then the short list and then the winner. And so it's a prize to give to books, but we see it more as a celebration of translated literature in the UK.
Yeah, nice. Out of the books that you will be or have judged, what would you say is the most common theme and trends?
Interesting question.
It depends on the age group you're writing, but yeah.
The really odd thing is there are themes and trends. Which is very strange. One of our judges, Beth Orton, she pointed them out. And it was just so fascinating. One of the trends is dehumanization and how it's just so easy to look at someone, even if they're in your own culture, and not see them as human.
Yeah.
To see them as less than human.
Yeah.
And how that degrades the dignity of the person that is being seen in that gaze.
Yeah.
And this theme kept recurring in books from very far-flung places, like mm-hmm. from Japan, like from India. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit disturbing that this is a global theme.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, world events have shown us that there is a lot of, you know, failure to see our fellow human beings as human beings.
Yeah.
And so we did decide a winner yesterday. So
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So it's Heart Lamp. And this is a novel about Muslim women living in southern India.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those issues were about how do disenfranchised people reclaim their dignity under adverse circumstances? And that seems to be, for me, a very, very large overarching theme in 21st century, early 21st century, the world.
Mm. Do you have an idea of why that could be? Or do you think it's just the generation where it's heading towards and how people depict each other and mm-hmm. just the worry of not being seen as human and being seen as, you know, where you're from or like just mm-hmm. the picture of what you look like or what mm-hmm. you... embody, not necessarily you as a person, your personality and the, you know, the traits that you keep.
I think it's economics, really. Racism, as Toni Morrison said, is a distraction. And it is created to distract us from the larger problem of taking resources away from poor people and then giving them to rich people.
My view is very limited. You know, people my age, and we all have very similar views. So hearing from someone else is just, you know, a good perspective to hear mm-hmm. from. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. That's all I have for you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.